Hey, this is Bo.
And this is Aaron.
And we are
Mash
the Controller.
You're listening to Third Eye Radio.
Listen outside the box.
Welcome to the Alter View. Interviews with some of the leading alternative perspectives in media. No topic is off limits with these in-depth conversations with authors, researchers, scientists, and more. And now, The Alter View with your host, Dara, on the Third Eye Radio Network.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. This is another edition of The Alter View. We've got another special guest for you. Coming all the way from UK on tour is Mr. Max Egan. How are you doing today, Max?
I'm good, brother. Thanks for asking me on. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, yes. Thank you for coming on. And on a personal note, I've been watching you for quite some time, and you are my go-to person for a sense of positivity no matter what's going on in the world. I love your approach and just be able to detox from like this fear porn that goes on in the alternative news world. So I just want to say thank you for that, and I hope all the listeners out there get a chance to visit your YouTube channel as well.
Well, thank you very much for that, brother. I mean, it is hard to keep it positive with all the stuff going on, but you know, I think there's opportunity in all crisis, and I think that's what we've got at this time, is an opportunity for freedom. And
yeah,
you know, if things weren't getting so negative, we wouldn't have the opportunity. So, you know, there's always a silver lining there somewhere if you look deep enough, I think.
Yeah, you know, if they, quote unquote, they can always utilize an opportunity, that means we could as well. So I like that approach.
Yeah, exactly. And this whole thing is an opportunity. It really is. I mean, it's an opportunity for us to realize that we're living in a people farm, and we have to break free. So, you know, if all this negative stuff wasn't happening, we wouldn't have this huge wave of awareness growing. So, yeah, there's good in all bad as well. Just depends on whether you're a glass half full or a glass half empty guy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one of the things that I was just talking about with the previous guest, that whole balance thing. I've noticed through my life that it seems that as things get worse, how we see them, there is the complete opposite side of things getting that much better as far as people being awakened and enlightened and being positive. So I think that's kind of a good thing as well.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, it does get hard. I mean, if people don't stand up, they won't have this opportunity for too much longer, but it is necessary. I mean, it wouldn't happen. Like I said, we wouldn't be having this awareness grow if it wasn't getting so negative, but things are getting pretty desperate. I mean, it is getting more and more difficult to remain positive in the face of everything that's going on. I mean, especially here in England, we've just had this bombing in Manchester,
right,
which is so obviously staged. It's just so obviously staged. I mean, and the timing of it and everything, you know, we've got the election was about to go ahead next week or next month, and Jeremy Corbyn was surging ahead in the election. It looked like Theresa May and the entire Tory party was going to be outed. So, of course, we have a very convenient bombing, and suddenly the election's cancelled. Theresa May has deployed troops on the street. She's talking about internet censorship and all sorts of things.
Wow.
So you can really see how this is just all part of the play. And every time they get in trouble, they just stage another one of these attacks. I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up and see it, but I think more people are. Even some of the soldiers out on the streets, I'm getting reports from Manchester from people that have been talking to some of the soldiers, and they seem pretty disgruntled. Like they can tell that this isn't, you know, all that it's supposed to be. They're not being given the full story, and you know, maybe the government is really behind this, because I would suggest they are.
Interesting. Yeah, I noticed one of the posts that I shared from you this morning. I don't remember if it was your article or not, or it was a repost, but basically you were talking about the false flag. The crisis actors from last year that were playing out this particular false flag.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was crisis actors in a shopping center. I mean, it wasn't the same place, but it was just crisis actors in Manchester rehearsing for one of these attacks. I mean, they do this everywhere. You can say, oh, it's a drill, they're preparing, but I would suggest that they're more than drills. They figure out how they're going to do these things, and it's always the same thing. You know, that thing that I posted, that was just a share, like you say, and it wasn't at the same event. It wasn't actually a rehearsal for this particular event. but it just shows that they do this. They rehearse for these events, and you know, you see them planning an event in Manchester or rehearsing an event in Manchester, and you can be sure there's going to be one happen within the next year anyway. So
yeah.
We've just seen it. You know, it's the same thing. It just happens over and over again. I'm surprised there wasn't a drill happening. I don't know whether they've found the guy's ID or passport yet, but that wouldn't surprise me either if they find a passport at the scene. They usually find them as well.
Laminated and untouched.
Yeah, you know, these bomb-proof passports that all these terrorists seem to have. It's quite amazing. But, you know, there's so many things wrong with this event, and it's just the same old story. You know, you've got to look at these and you've got to ask who benefits in the face of these events. You know, obviously this event was carried out by someone who wishes to escalate the bombing campaign in Syria and increase bombing campaigns in Libya, because we are still bombing Libya. A lot of people don't know that, but we are. The United States is certainly bombing Libya as much as it's bombing anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So this was obviously done by somebody who wants to escalate the conflict overseas and wants to bring in more laws in England. So who would that be? You know, it certainly isn't some Islamic extremist. I mean, you do this, you know that you're just going to get your country obliterated and you're going to get bombed more. So this is, you know, problem, reaction, solution. Cui bono, who benefits? And the people who benefit the most from this attack is Theresa May's government.
Interesting.
Well, it's always a way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did some work, let's see, what was it, 2010 or 2012-ish, when you went over to Palestine? I found that.
Yeah, I went into Gaza Strip in 2012. That was a really interesting experience. That was a really life-changing experience just to see what's going on in the ground in Gaza, in Palestine itself. It's very, very different to what people are being told. You know, it's a human rights atrocity of enormous proportions. It's one of the greatest moral dilemmas we face. And I believe it also provides a legal key for, you know, people who believe law is real. If you really believe this stuff is real and we're constrained by all of these rules these politicians write on paper, well, there's a piece of paper called the Fourth Geneva Convention. And Article 33 of that says that collective punishment is a war crime. Gaza Strip is collective punishment. Whether you're on the side of Muslims or Jews or Israelis or Palestinians, Jeff, you can put all that aside and just realize that the average age in Gaza Strip is 17. This is a population of 1.8 million people, mainly children, who are held in a state of collective punishment. It's a war crime, and it's supported by tens of thousands of politicians all around the world. This provides the people with a legal opportunity to take all of these people out of power, because they are all guilty under their own law of war crimes under their own law. So if they're inflicting legislation upon us, like this police state that Theresa May is bringing in here in the UK, how is any of this legislation valid if it can be shown that she's a provable war criminal, which she is under her own law? So this is a kind of a legal loophole. And if these politicians are not to be held accountable for this war crime, this international war crime they're all supporting, then it would indicate that there is no law. Because if it doesn't apply to them, then it doesn't apply to anybody.
Right.
You know, what I've been trying to let people know and help people realize is that the world is run by a criminal class.
Yep.
That's what we've got here. We've got the worst position, the worst people possible for the position, who have maneuvered themselves into positions of power, and they're running everything else. And they're the ones who are writing all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And until we call it, it's not going to change. You know, all these issues that we're facing on the ground, whether it's fracking or whether it's these terror attacks or the wars or anything, all of these are simply symptoms of systemic corruption, and we need to deal with this systemic corruption at its root. And until we do that, we're not going to see any change. We can put Band-Aids on symptoms all we want, but nothing's going to change until we address this corruption, which has infiltrated our entire political system.
Yeah, it was interesting how, at least in the West, we get a certain perception through media of how some things are. And one of the fascinating stories that I heard you talk about is your venture into Palestine and Israel through the tunnels. Can you briefly tell us that story? Because I find that one very fascinating.
Well, it was the only really way, you know, the only real way for us to get in there. We had to contact some rebels and sneak our way over to Rafah and then crawl through the tunnel system. And these aren't the Hamas smuggling tunnels that you hear about. This was a rebel tunnel that was dug by kids, and it was 50 meters underground. It was just a little tunnel. We had to crawl. It was over a mile, probably a mile, mile and a half through this tunnel, and it took us about an hour and a half to get through the tunnel. We came out all sort of ratted and torn and dirty and dusty, and it was an amazing experience, you know. But going through this tunnel, you know, you're 50 meters underground and there's no shoring, nothing holding it up. Mm. And you think, you know, one bomb, one attack on the area could bring the whole tunnel down on top of you. But even there in that position, when I was thinking that, I was thinking, you know, it was okay. I was totally okay with it because just to be in that position was an incredible thing. Yeah. You know, I was thinking, you know, how could I possibly end up in a position where I'm here? You know, me of all people to be 50 meters underground underneath Gaza Strip on Rafah Crossing, this is an incredible thing. So it was worth it. I thought, well, if I die here, that's okay. Just to have got here is an amazing achievement anyway. And it was the same when I was in Gaza. You know, if anything had happened, if anything had gone wrong while I was in there, I was totally okay with it just because of the fact that I was in there, which was so unusual anyway. So, you know, it was an amazing, uplifting thing. But when I got there and stepped on the ground, When I got there and stepped on the ground, it was almost like stepping on hallowed ground. It really was. Hmm. I could feel the energy there. It was just unique. It's a place like no other. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get back there for the last 3 or 4 years. It's very, very difficult to get back inside.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't a war zone, I'd move there. I'd go and live in Gaza in a minute. I really would, because there's just something incredible about the place.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about your contact or your friend that was there. Just the no matter what's going on, the uplifted spirits and the smiles and the joy that still remains is quite rare.
Yeah, these people have an incredible spirit. They really do. They will never be squashed. You know, they will never stop fighting for their rights, and they'll never stop standing up for themselves until the very last one of them is killed. Mm-hmm. And I would hate to see that happen. They are truly a beautiful people, you know, and they're a gentle people. They're almost a childlike people in their gentle nature. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful, the Palestinians, and they're not anything like what we are told.
Yeah.
You know, and people in Gaza are held very much under the sway of Hamas, and Hamas was created by Israel to begin with. I mean, Hamas was put there as competition to Fatah, and the people in Gaza are as much terrorized by Hamas as they are by Israel. And, you know, the world sits idly by and watches this and says that, oh, it's the Palestinians' fault because they've got Hamas there. Why don't they get rid of Hamas and vote them out of power? Well, they're not allowed to have elections and they don't have any weapons. Hamas have all the weapons. And so basically they've just created this scene where you've got Hamas running these people. Whenever Israel needs money, Hamas will fire a rocket over the wall and Israel will get more funding.
Wow.
You know, the whole thing seems to be a scam, and it's the people in Palestine who suffer the most for it. And without this group of so-called terrorists at their doorstep, Israel wouldn't receive all the funding that it gets. And it could go in and wipe out the Palestinians and take over the whole place in a day if they really wanted to. Mm-hmm. But they don't. They keep them there so they can keep crying out, oh, my God, we're under attack, and keep receiving funding and keep expanding and doing all the damage that they're doing in Jordan and Lebanon and everywhere else around the area. I mean, they have decimated and destabilized the entire Middle East.
Yeah.
And they've done so with Western funding under the guise of protecting themselves against Palestinian terrorists. And really, it's the Palestinians who are just kept there under siege and brutalized in order that they will respond so Israel can cry victim. I mean, the whole thing is such a scam. It really is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Can you walk us through a little bit how you got to be on your current path?
Look, it was something that I never had planned. I really never did. I mean, it's interesting, my life, I've always lived on the outside of society. I've been a musician for most of my life. I woke up when I was like 4 years old to the fact that something was terribly wrong. Mm. I got kicked out of all of my high schools and just became a musician because I couldn't really fit into society at all. I just didn't want to. But my life provided me the opportunity to research all the things I wanted to research while I was doing that. And I was able to sort of play guitar and live my life as art and still get time to research all the things and look at ancient history and all this sort of stuff. Mm. And along the way, like all of these things happened, you know, even when I look at the divorce with my wife and how I was separated from my son, the only way I could really get to communicate with my son was through online gaming, which then I developed a relationship with the clan online, which gave me skills in Photoshop and video editing and all sorts of stuff. I learned how to do HTML, build websites and all these sorts of things from being in this clan. Mm-hmm. So all these things happened in my life, which gave me all the skills I needed to be a public speaker and to make films and to be a radio host. But I didn't really know that's where I was going. But I mean, I spent most of my life on stage playing guitar, so I'm quite happy. I'm quite comfortable in front of crowds. Didn't do a lot of speaking, but I was always up there talking and playing. So everything happened. And then when I got to a point where I had all the skills I needed to do what I'm doing now, the universe took everything away from me except this path. And this was all that I had open to me. You know, basically all my music collection got stolen. All these things happened to me. And all I had left was my research. So I just immersed myself in my research and became a radio host and didn't even plan to become a radio host. I thought that it would be a good idea, but I didn't know how to do it. So I kind of put myself in the energetic state where I was a radio host. You know, I had this, this meditation. This is a big complicated story, but I had this meditation where I basically just connected with everything. And I realized that it's an emotionally based reality and it's a mirror of your emotional state.
Yeah.
So I put myself in the emotional state where I was a radio host. I thought that would be a really good thing to do. Had no idea how to go about it. Didn't even know about internet radio. But when I was sitting there in that state, within 6 weeks, I was offered a job as a radio host. And then I went on and continued doing what I'm doing. And now I'm back traveling around the world and doing lectures and all this sort of stuff. And I didn't plan any of it. The universe kind of just threw me onto this path. I've never planned to be a public speaker. I don't enjoy public speaking. I think it's kind of weird getting up on stage and talking to a bunch of people, but you know, I do it because it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but it's something that the universe has just put me here. I don't really know how it happened. And if you'd asked me 10 years ago if I would ever be doing anything like this, I would have said no. There's no way I'd ever be doing something like this. But here I am doing it. And I think I have a saying that if you throw yourself to the wind, you can ride it. And I'm living proof that that works. And that's kind of what happened. You know, when I started seeing the need to speak out, because I've been researching this stuff all my life. And when 9/11 happened, I thought, well, hang on, this is actually pretty serious. And maybe I should be sharing this information. And then I just sort of threw myself to the wind. And it all worked. And I've been writing it ever since and just kind of bumping around the world and speaking to people. And it's just kind of all worked out. So, yeah, here I am. I don't really know how it happened, brother. It just happened, and here I am, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, when you, I don't want to say rely, but when you respond to the universe like that and you follow what's pretty much just given to you, there's it seems to be this certain fluidity in life versus you trying to do what you want to get, you know, versus what you need to do. That's how I have found, like, things, as busy as I get with my station and YouTube and everything else that's going on, including music and whatnot, but it just works. No matter what I do, it seems to work. I mean, you know, you always hear people, I wish I had more time in the day. It's like, I'm fine with the amount of time in the day. You know, it works for me. So I think when you just do what you're supposed to do, it just ends up being that much easier in that sense. Not necessarily like the topics you research or people you may come across that have another agenda for you type of thing. But I think it works out.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think people have too much focus on the outcome of the projects they put into play as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no stake in the outcome of anything that I do. I think people get this fixation on what something should look like when they start something going forward.
Yeah.
And they get this tunnel vision and they don't leave themselves open to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work out exactly the way they wanted, they get frustrated, they get despondent, they feel like they failed or whatever.
Yeah.
When there was all these other possibilities and opportunities there that they didn't see because they had too much focus. So I'll put something in motion, like a project or whatever, and I'll look at it sort of organically as its own life form. And I'll help it along the way, but I'll let it unfold in other ways that I may not have planned, because these things will often end up to be, you know, really, really good and something that I couldn't even foresee. So, you know, and no stake in the outcome. If things don't work, there's usually some seed that's planted there or some pathway that leads somewhere else. So it's all part of the journey. A lot of people forget that it's about the journey, and they have too much focus on what the future should be and what it should look like. It's the same thing with trying to establish freedom. You know, so many people say, well, if you don't like this system, what's the system you want to put in? And I'm saying, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know what freedom looks like. We've never been free.
Yeah.
All I know is that we can't go on living in this slavery system. And if we all put our heads together, we'll find something that does work.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm of the firm believer that there's nothing really wrong with the system. What is wrong is in ourselves. You know, what is wrong is our failure to put morals above law, to mm-hmm. put people above economics and all this sort of stuff, you know. Our failure to do the right thing in all that we do, you know, if we were to do the right thing in all that we do, that would ripple out and the system would have to change around us. Corruption and all of this stuff and war and degradation, this couldn't exist in the world if we were doing the right thing and we didn't tolerate wrong behavior.
Right.
So, you know, that's really where it all comes down. And if we do that and we change the way we interact with the people around us, then the world has to change around us organically. That's really how to do it. And that's the big problem for people, is that they want the world to change, but they don't want to have to act themselves. They want someone to simply send them the newsletter and to hear that the world has changed and they can just continue going to work, you know. And that's the problem, that the fact that they believe they need to go to work and they need to do all these things. You know, most people, unfortunately, who are speaking out against the system don't really want freedom. All they want is a higher wage and less hours.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Yep.
And that's an unfortunate reality.
So rather than trying to see where you'll be in the future, how do you see yourself how do you see yourself helping people to, you know, get beyond just the newsletter and actually coming together in a forum or wherever to make some kind of change?
By leading by example in what I do, you know, hopefully, you know, me being out here and doing this will inspire people. You know, hopefully the fact that I've reached so many people with my voice will inspire people to speak out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that I always stress to people that, you know, I'm a social misfit. I'm a guitar player. I'm not anybody that planned this. I'm not anybody to look up to or anything like that. I'm just like you. I'm just a person on the street, the same as anybody else. I just decided to speak. And the fact that I did that, I mean, I've reached hundreds of thousands of people. I get emails from people who say, you know, I was suicidal last night and I listened to your show and you saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this. And this is incredibly inspiring when you get emails like this from people. And, you know, anybody can make a difference. You really can if you just choose to get involved and lose the stake in the outcome of your actions, you know. You know, we go through our lives just cowed and sitting around and doing what we're told all the time because we're scared to speak up. And we don't realize that the people that are doing this are just people just like us. It's nobody mm-hmm. special. There's nobody who has any more value than anybody else. So, you know, just get involved. I think it's really important for people to do so. And I've created a project called the Full Circle Project, whereby you can find support groups around you. You can go and log onto this site, do a search, find like-minded people in the area and form a support group so you've got that strong group. And just stand up and start questioning authority. Do it in the right way. Do it eloquently. You just ask these people why they believe they have a right of ownership over you.
Yeah.
You know, do it in the right way. When you put the strength of the community around you, you can make a difference. You know, we don't have to go and protest. We don't have to, you know, have violent revolution or anything. If we simply withdraw support from this system, you know, non-compliance, and have the support of our community around us in doing so, we'll change the world in a day. It's really that simple. We hold the whole thing up. So it isn't that anybody has to go out there and get involved. The best way to get involved is to get uninvolved with the system,
exactly.
Simply disconnect from it. It's like the Occupy movement. I was saying it's all very well that you've all got together and you know there's a problem now, but there's no point going and occupying Wall Street because you have no plan.
Mm-hmm.
You have no plan for the future that you want. You just know that things are all messed up. You don't want this, but you don't know what you want. You don't need to occupy Wall Street. We already occupy the entire earth, but we don't occupy ourselves. You stay home and occupy yourself, and you're going to find that you'll make a big difference. I'm actually trying to push forth, you know, start off with one day a month and hopefully build that up very quickly to more. But the 15th of every month, non-compliance day. If you can stay home from work, do it. But at the very least, don't spend any money. Don't use your credit cards and don't support the system for one day every month, the 15th of every month. Start off slow, see how many people we can get involved, and let's build this up to a global stand of non-compliance against this system. That's what we need, you know.
Can you imagine all those dollars not going into the profiteers just one day?
One day it would send a shockwave around the planet, brother. It really would. You imagine all the people sitting in Wall Street looking at the screens, waiting for the numbers to change, and they don't change? They'd be having a meltdown. It would send a shockwave around the world, and it would send a huge wave of confidence around the world too. People would think, yeah, look what we just did. Okay, let's do it 2 days next month, and then, hey, let's just do it a week, and let's just stop spending anything, and let's just start supporting each other until the system changes and these politicians are held accountable for their actions, you know. We hold the whole thing up, brother, and if we pull financial support from it just in for one day, it would change everything. Just one day of noncompliance would change the whole world.
My mind is kind of just racing right now of the numbers that could be involved with that. Just imagine, I don't even know, like the population of just a single city, how that would affect just local government there alone, let alone the world.
It would be incredible. Imagine if everybody did it. If everybody decided not to spend any dollars for 24 hours, not to spend money or use a credit card, there would be literally trillions upon trillions of transactions that didn't happen that day. The books would simply stop and the whole financial system would be in chaos.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. You know, so yeah, I think we should do it. I mean, we are the ones who support this whole thing, and that's the best move you can possibly do is to withdraw support from it. And what are the police going to do? Are they going to come to your house and arrest you and say you must spend money today?
You haven't spent money today.
Staying home with my family. Where's the problem? You know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, we go and we do these protests in the street. We have all these violent confrontations, and it teaches the police to believe that we are the enemy. The people are the enemy, so they need their Kevlar and their armor and all the stuff they need, because it's always us and them. Mm-hmm. If we simply withdraw support, well, they can all stay home and withdraw support as well. They can all go and have a day with their families as well. I don't think they're going to worry about that. They'll probably enjoy themselves. So, you know, it could be a good thing, and it's a good way to get the message out to people, and it's a good way to let the police know that we don't want to fight them. We're not against them. Mm-hmm. We simply want some accountability from the politicians, and we're not prepared to support this people farming and this slavery system anymore.
Yeah, and as far as I've noticed, as the protests goes, you know, when we go out, we may get a few more people interested, but as far as protesting at a Capitol building or whatnot, they really don't care that we're there. It means nothing to them.
So, well, it means nothing to them, and the media will always play it the wrong way as well. I mean, the police always arrive, and it's the police that start the violence, so it ends up being a violent protest, and all you need is a few well-placed media cameras and a bit of media spin, and they can portray it as just another unruly, riotous crowd, and all the people at home think, oh my God, all these teenagers, these students, whatever, you know, the protesters, they're out there causing trouble, and thank God our government is there to protect us.
Yeah.
You know, so the media just plays it that way and spins it that way, and even if the people don't think that, well, the media will spin it that way anyway. So they don't really achieve anything. And, you know, it's the government always says, well, if you don't like what the government's doing, then have marches and have protests and have all these rallies. They want us to do this because they can gauge the public response and they can spin it any way they want. But if we stay home and withdraw support from the system and pull all our funds from this system for a day, the whole system will crumble and fall. It's really that simple. They don't want anyone to think about that. They don't want anyone to know that. That's why they keep you running on the treadmill. Oh, you know, you can't take a day off. You can't not comply for the day. That's money. You won't get your wage. You can't have that, you know. And someone else will take your job and all this sort of stuff. You know, I mean, they keep people on the treadmill in this state of scarcity where they're quite literally afraid to step off the treadmill. They're afraid to bite the hand that feeds them if they want. They're not realizing that this hand isn't feeding them. It's simply handing out scraps, and it's about time they bit it.
Yeah, yep. What is the website you talked about, the Full Circle, the forum for like-minded individuals?
The Full Circle Project. The website is fullcircleproject.net.
Okay.
And it's just a project that I've got together. It's got the community connector, and you can actually go there and just link up, find people, and form an action group. And there's a forum there where you can post your results and see what you're achieving in your community.
Nice.
You know, I'm of the belief that there's an issue in every community, whether it's the roads or the garbage collection or anything. There'd be something in every community that the people are annoyed about. And what they need to do is identify that problem and then start identifying the legislation that created the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, we're always putting Band-Aids on symptoms, and we're not addressing the root core of the problem, which is to go for the criminal, I would suggest, criminal, who has written the legislation to begin with. A great example of this is here in England, an anti-fracking group, the government actually named anti-frackers as domestic extremists, okay? They labelled anti-frackers in the same sentence as al-Qaeda terrorists and Islamic extremists and ISIS terrorists. They put anti-fracking in there. And the government did that, and one of the members of the anti-fracking community happens to be a bishop or a priest or something from up north in near Blackpool, and he's a priest, and he was very offended to have been labelled into this group the same as ISIS extremists, yeah. And he registered a formal complaint against the government and got the entire weight of the church behind him, and so the government had to withdraw this legislation. And not only that, he's following it through, and he wants to know the name of the person that wanted to enact the legislation.
Nice.
That's a good thing. Coming from the church, I don't really agree with the church, but a lot of people do. But, hey, that's really good, because here's a priest who's actually going for the throat and going for the root core of the problem, which is the individual in office who wrote the legislation. That's what people need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a scene that I did in Queensland, Australia, or New South Wales, Australia, with the Gaswell Bentley as well. And I said to those people to write a letter to the government to ask them to show cause why they shouldn't be held up for breaches of national security and attacks against national security for threatening our water table.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, water is essential for the security of our nation, being a spring-fed nation. Therefore, any attack against their water should be seen as an attack against national security. So we want to know who wrote the legislation which allowed these fracking companies in. And they stopped that well within a week. And it's the same process. It's the same way this priest is going about it. You know, you're going to name me as a domestic terrorist? I'm a priest. I want to know who made that statement. I'm not just asking the government to retract it. I want to know who the individual in government is who made that statement so I can have them held accountable. And that's a good thing, and that's what people need to do. Realize that all of this legislation comes from people. Someone somewhere in an office wrote down on a piece of paper and they put their wet ink signature on that, and that's what has caused the hardship in your community.
Yeah.
And when you go for the throat of that individual and you hold them accountable for abuse of the office they hold, then you're going to start seeing some results in this.
Right, right. Now, you're working on a current documentary, aren't you?
I'm working on two. There's one that I really would like to get finished quite quickly called Kakistocracy, which is part two of Transformation.
Nice.
That's because the things are snowballing so fast at the moment. I've got a lot of new information that I really would like to get out to people. It's difficult to do on the radio shows. It's difficult to do in interviews. But if I can make a feature-length film, a documentary, then I think I'll reach a lot more people with that. I think we're facing a pretty clear and present danger from the rise of transhumanism and a few things like that that are coming down the pipe. You know, vaccinations. There's so many things. There's so much information that's come in the last couple of years. I did plan on making part two of Transformation. I put that film out 5 years ago, and I'd really like to get part two done. I'd like to hopefully get that completed by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I'm on tour, so I've got to try to find a way of doing that or perhaps even ending this tour early if I can get the backing to finish the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important that we get this information now. But, yeah, that's what I'm doing, working on a film called Kakistocracy. And it's good to see this word is taking off a little bit too. I've been using this for the last year. It's an old word, kakistocracy, which is defined as governance by the worst elements of society who govern entirely in their own interests to the permanent detriment of all other classes. And it's an old word that was taken out of the dictionary about 100 years ago, and I'm trying to bring it back into use. And I'm actually seeing quite a few people using it.
Nice.
I saw Cynthia McKinney use it a couple of weeks ago. I've seen James Corbett use it. I've seen Luke Radowski using it. So a few people are starting to bring this back into play, because really that's what we have. We've got the worst people possible for the job who are now in control.
Yeah.
And it's interesting they would have sort of pushed this word to the side, and now we've got words like oligarchy and all sorts of stuff like that. And it is kind of an oligarchy, but even more than that, it's a kakistocracy. you know, it's just the scum of the earth that are running the place. And it's time we called it out. So, yeah, I want to make a film about that and address where they're leading us, because, you know, what's going on? There's so much. We're under attack from so many different directions. We really are. And we're kept so distracted all the time with external stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of what's going on with Israel and Palestine, a lot of what's going on in Syria, a lot of what's going on with all these wars, the posturing towards North Korea, this bomb attack in Manchester, all of these things mainly are theater, and they're theaters of distraction for us. And the way I can sort of, the analogy I like to use is that imagine you're in a house and you've got a whole bunch of dogs running around the house and barking at the house, and you're boarding up all the windows and the doors and keeping these dogs at bay, and you don't really have time to notice that sleeping in on the floor and crawling up your skin are these lice, and they're embedding themselves in you. And before you realize it, you're completely covered with these lice. You didn't really notice them because you were too busy with the dogs barking at the door, but really it's the lice that were the problem. That's the sort of a situation that we're in. You know, there's so much stuff going on so close to us in our community, with transhumanism, with vaccines, with the weaponization of viruses and the weaponization of diseases and all sorts of things that are going on around us, the smart grid, the electromagnetic grid, all of these things are going on and nobody's really noticing it. Little outcries, little bits of this and that, but no one's really putting the whole picture together because they're so busy trying to deal with all this external human tragedy, which is why the human tragedy is there. I really believe that.
Yeah.
You know, and even myself, man, I've been distracted by a lot of the things externally as well, focusing on Palestine and Gaza and all this sort of stuff, which are very, very important issues. But again, there's stuff going on the ground right here in our communities that needs to be addressed very, very quickly. And we can address it if people become aware of it. So that's what I want to do with this new film. And I want to make it in such a way as to, like, I really want to put some time into this one and make something sort of snappy and something that's going to reach the kids, because they've got very short attention spans and they like all this snappy graphic stuff. So we've got to find something that's going to reach this generation, because my generation, they're not really listening to us that much, the young kids, and it's the young kids that are under the threat of this whole transhumanist agenda. So we've got to find a way of cracking the shell with these guys. So that's the plan. That's what I want to try to do with the rest of the year.
Nice. Very good. And what are you on tour for right now?
Just giving talks, just doing presentations and talking about this sort of stuff, actually, and trying to alert people on the ground of what's going on. But I've got a couple of months off now, so I'm going to maybe get back to the United States or do a few things, try to get myself somewhere where I can focus on this film for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's important to get it out to people.
So remember, if you just happen to go through Hannibal, Missouri, my interview coordinator would love to have you as a house guest.
Well, it's a possibility, brother. It's a possibility. I might be kicking around the United States for maybe most of July and August. So you never know.
Good.
I've got some filming that I've got to do. There's a good possibility I'll be in a documentary being made by quite a prominent filmmaker, actually. It's making a documentary on the drug culture, drugs A to Z,
mm-hmm.
and I believe they want me to narrate a section on ayahuasca. So I won't tell you who that is, because I'll wait till it's all finalized. But there's a chance I'll be there for that.
Nice.
And, so you never know, brother. I could end up bumping through Missouri at some stage. And
she really enjoyed talking with you. That really brightened her day. So thank you for talking to her.
Not a problem. I'll see if I can arrange it.
So what do you got coming up then, as far like after your vacation or hiatus? Are you going to go back on tour, or what are your plans in the future?
Well, you know, it's not really going to be a vacation or a hiatus. I want to get off the road for a while. It's been doing so much traveling. I mean, I travel a lot, and it's kind of grueling. It really is. Like, even now, I've been through 8 different time zones in the last month. And
jeez.
I'm kind of sleeping in 4-hour blocks at the moment. I can't get a normal night's sleep. But, you know, I kind of go to bed at midnight and wake up at 4 o'clock and in the morning, and then go back to bed at, you know, kind of midday and get up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So
it's kind of
bizarre and all over the place. And I just, no matter what I do, I just can't get to sleep all the way through. So And it's just all the time zones and all the airports and all the, you know, my body doesn't know whether it's coming or going, whether it's daytime or nighttime. So I got to get off the traveling for a little while. And I really want to work on the film. So I really want to get this film out. And it's just difficult to do on the road. I can't make it on a laptop. You can't make a feature length film on a laptop. It just, it's a nightmare. So I need to get home to all my stuff to do that. So I'm not really going to be having time off. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be working on the film, you know, quite extensively. And once I get on the roll with these things, I tend to work 18 hours a day once I start and get into the video editing. And you get on a roll and, you know, I'll do things like I'll go to bed and I'll roll over in the middle of the night and have an idea. And
I know about that.
I'm not going to remember it in the morning, so I'm going to have to get up and do it now.
Yeah.
That's what happens. So it won't be much time off, but I just – because I've been traveling so much since 2012, I've just been bumping around the world so much, like the last 5 years, I'd really like to have a whole year at home. Mm-hmm. I'd like, you know, and the way it's looking at the moment, I'm not going to get home until probably September 2018. So I'd like to try to maybe cut that short and get home this year and maybe stay there for all of 2018, and then I can tour again in 2019. Yeah. Or if I don't get home till 2018, then I want to stay there for all of 2019. And tour again in 2020. Yeah, I mean, I won't be able to stay there for longer than a year. No matter how much I want to do it, I'll get itchy feet. I'll want to travel again. I'll be sitting there thinking, what am I doing sitting here when I could be out there? And when I get out here, I think, oh, my God, I want to be home. So that's just the way it is. It's just one of the paradoxes of life, you know.
Yeah.
But, it's been a long time since I spent 12 months at home. Mm. And I think it would be really good for me at this stage. I mean, I'm kind of 60 this year. And I think I'd like to put my feet up for a little while. You know, I won't stop the radio shows, and I won't stop being out on the front line, and I won't stop the activism, and I will get back on tour again. But I think I just need to do that in order to recoup and to be able to keep going. Otherwise, I just won't survive. You can't survive on the road for too long. It gets unhealthy and counterproductive, you know.
Even solar batteries need to be recharged once in a while.
That's the thing, they do, brother, and I need a recharge, so that's the plan, go home and recharge.
Yeah, nice. How many countries have you been to?
How many countries have I been to?
Yeah.
Oh, look, over the years, a lot. I haven't been to Russia, I haven't been to Albania, I haven't been to a few of the northern ones in around Russia and up you know, like Latvia and places like this. I haven't been to some of the Balkan countries. I haven't been to a lot of the countries in Africa. I've been to Northern Africa, but I've been to most countries in Europe. I've been to the United States. I've been to most countries through Asia, and so I've been around. I've been through a lot of South American countries, but I haven't been everywhere. Maybe half. Maybe a little less than half. I don't know. I've been to a lot of countries. I couldn't really count. I'd have to look through a couple of passports and count the stamps.
That's still a great deal for what, 5 years, you said?
Well, in five years, I've probably been to in the last 5 years, I've probably been to probably 40 countries or something like that. 45 countries in the last 5 years. But before that, I mean, I was touring before that in bands as well. So.
Mm.
There's a lot of countries I went to back in those days as well. But in the last 5 years, probably 42 countries, something like that, 42, 45.
Do you feel that the reception of your information has been well received? You think that it could be farther along by your ideas? Or do you think I don't want to say there's no hope, but do you think people are getting it?
Look, I do to a great degree. All the talks I've given have been very, very well received.
Mm.
And everywhere I go around the world, I see more awareness growing. I won't say wakefulness, because even most of the truth movement, most of the independent media, they may be aware, but they're not awake.
Right.
If there was major wakefulness happening, we'd see, you know, a major exodus from this system.
Yes.
And we'd see people walking away in droves. So. But we are seeing a wave of awareness growing. I mean, I can judge by people that I talk to in supermarkets and on aircraft and taxi drivers and stuff like this. And everywhere I go, I'll strike up conversations. You know, what do you think of the world? What's it like here? What do you think of your government? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And people will give me their explanation. And over since 2012, in the last 5 years when I've been traveling, I've seen more and more people annoyed with their government. More and more people are aware that there's a problem, but they're just not really aware enough of what it is. They're not awake enough to what it is. They don't really know what the solutions are. Very often they're scared to stand up and say anything. And many people, unfortunately, they kept so busy on the treadmill that they kept divided from the people around them. And that is the solution. You've got to unite with the people around you because you've got to have a strong community. If the whole community down tools and says no, there's nothing the government can do. You know, so that's the solution there. So I'm not really seeing a lot of that with people, but I am seeing waves of wakefulness happening, awareness happening anyway, where people are aware there's a problem. Like I said, unfortunately, they're too busy competing with each other to see what the solution is. And I think it's imperative that people realize that's the problem. The fact that they're competing with each other all the time. There's a reason you kept so divided. There's a reason you kept in a state of scarcity. And it isn't just because they want to keep you poor. It's because they want to keep you divided. They don't want you to have time to look around. Uh-huh. They don't want you to have time to be able to go and talk to the people on the street around you. And even if you can, they don't want those people to have time to listen to you. You know, even if what you're saying is true, I just don't have time, I'm busy, I've got to go and put food on the table and feed the kids and do this and do that, and that's all part of the plan. And, you know, if people could just step back for 5 minutes and look, I'm sure they'd see it, but it's getting them that 5 minutes is the problem. But, yeah, I mean, I am seeing a huge wave of awareness. And with the talks that I'm doing, I'm having people going away feeling really positive and really empowered. And the last talks I've been doing have been a bit of a kick in the butt for people as well. I mean, I kind of go in there and they expect me to be all empowered and all, you know. At the last talk I did in AV8, someone came up to me and said, gee, it's been a really dark weekend, a lot of really disturbing information. We're glad you're last, Max, so you can lift us up and make us feel positive again. And I looked at her and I said, really? You think that's what I'm going to do? And, I mean, I tried to, but I gave them a bit of a kick in the butt as well and said, it's time for you people to take this home and go out there and get involved.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't get involved, then we're not going to get anywhere. It's time for the people to get involved on the ground. Don't think you've made a difference by coming to this conference. I mean, it's great that you've come here and you've got the information, but you've got to now take this information home and you've got to apply it to your own community.
Yeah.
You know, we can't come and save that. You know, you are the only ones who can make a difference on the ground where you live, and it's up to you to do it. That's why you come here, to get the tools to do that. And now is the time for you to go and implement those tools, because, you know, if we've frankly got a pretty short window left, especially when you look at the whole AI grid that's coming online. There was a paper that was released last year by the White House. I'll see if I can remember the name of it, if I can get to my desktop for a minute. I don't know if I can, but it's called Future Visions for Computing and Nanotechnology and the Grand Challenge. I'll send you a copy of it, but it's basically outlining a plan for nanotech and AI. It is a 15-year plan, and it's saying this is all going to be online. This is the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, and the 15-year plan. So they want to implement all this within 15 years.
Wow.
And 14 years from when that that document was released. And what they're basically talking about is Skynet. It's about handing control of everything over to one big computer system, which is AI, can think for itself, and it talks to other computers that can all think for themselves, and it talks to them in a language that we can't even understand. And this is an intelligent machine that is going to be running all of human existence, and this is a terribly bad idea. And this is due to come online in about 14 years from now. And when you look at what they're doing with the smart grid and the nanotech in the food and what they're really, Elon Musk with all the stuff that he's suggesting, you know, these vaccines that can put a mesh over your brain that puts babies online as soon as they're born. People don't realize the dangers of this. I mean, this is like a hive mind. This is a removal of all independent thought, a removal of all private thought. This is a very, very dangerous thing to be doing. And this is the direction that we're going. And it's got about a 14-year window we've got to change this. And if people do not become aware of it, you know, so many people thinking this whole AI grid is going to be a huge boon to humanity. A lot of the kids are thinking this is the way we want to go. We want to be permanently online in our brain. This is not good. This is basically controlling the entire species, putting people into a hive mind before they're even born, not giving them the choice of what they want to be.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be this and be this drone and do what you're told and get fed what we give you, and that's what it is. This is a terrible, terrible future that has been played out for humanity. So we have a very short window to address this. And it's all tied with a lot of stuff. I mean, when you look at the vaccine technology, all the stuff they're doing with vaccines and the environments they're setting up within people, mm-hmm. it's such a huge, huge topic. But this is what I want to do with the film. I want to try to get this out to people. But we have a very, very short window for this, brother. We really do. And people have to become aware of it. So that's something I've been trying to stress in the talks, the need for people to take this home and get involved.
What could someone do on a local level to try to curb that AI?
Well, it's spreading the information is the what we need with AI more than anything is spreading the information for people to really step back and look at it objectively.
Yeah.
Not just get led down the garden path by the glitz and glamour of what this means. You know, all the movies they put out, you know, so many movies have come out from Hollywood which glamorize AI and make it look like something really good. Really, if you want to look at it, go and look at The Matrix and look at Terminator and roll that together. And this is what they've got planned. You know, this is not good. This is not what we want. You know, and there's nothing wrong with technology. It's just who controls the technology. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what our governments get up to, you look at the whole Pizzagate, all this pedophile stuff that's been exposed and uncovered. You look at the amount of wars that have been manufactured and the fact that this whole human species is enslaved to debt. And think about it. These are the people who are running the technology. If you're going to give these people and hand over ultimate control of everything to these people, this is a very, very dangerous thing to do. You know, if ultimate control is going to be given to anybody, it needs to be someone very, very benevolent. And I don't think there's anybody that is this benevolent enough to have that control. I really don't. Not any one person, not any committee, not anybody. The human race should be able to be free to express itself the way it sees fit. And this ability is being removed from us through AI. I think people will get it if it's just presented to them in the right way. So it's ways we can do that. I mean, anything you can do to spread this awareness is worthwhile. Anything you can do to question authority and question legislation in your area, which is helping spread this type of grid, is worthwhile doing. You know, the smart meters, all this sort of stuff. Just questioning, just asking why. Anytime anybody tells you to do anything, ask them why.
Yeah.
Why they believe they have a right of ownership over you. I mean, I'm just here in quiet enjoyment of my life. Why are you interfering with me? Mm-hmm. These are the questions that I ask them all the time. So it's just questioning authority and spreading information in as calm and an eloquent a way as you can and causing people to think for themselves a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Max, I want to thank you for coming on today. We really, really appreciate your company and your knowledge and what you're bringing to our humanity. So thank you for that. And if you could give out your contact information or your YouTube or whatever social media, if you may have, you'd like to have people have so they can get in touch and watch and listen to you, go ahead and share that.
Well, my website is thecrowhouse.com. You'll find out everything about me there. I've got a couple of YouTube channels. One of them is AOD Scarecrow, but I don't really use that anymore. But just search The Crow House on YouTube. But if you go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, you'll find a link there to a Facebook group. You'll find a link there to my YouTube channel, and you'll find articles and all the videos I've done. Everything's there on The Crow House. It's all free. There's nothing to subscribe to. I don't do any of this for money. There is no user section or subscriber section. There's over 1,500 to 1,600 pages on The Crow House now. There's years and years of articles. There's a huge portal of information there for people to share. Six films that I've made are all there for free. Hundreds of hours of radio shows are all there for free. That's what it's about, folks. Just get the information out to people, share the information, and let's make a difference. And, thanks for asking me on, brother. I'm happy to come on any time. Unfortunately, I'm traveling at the moment, and I've got people here and blah, blah, blah. But I'll be happy to come on and do a longer show once I get to Europe. I'll be in Amsterdam next week.
Nice.
I'll be in the United States probably in July. So happy to come on and talk to you again when I've got a little bit more time. But, everything about me is at thecrowhouse.com. You'll find all the links to everything else there. If anyone can support me, there's a Patreon account as well. You can throw $1 a month in. It would be great if someone can do that. That's all that keeps me going at the moment. I've spent all my life savings on trying to do this. I've tried to do it in such a way that people will see I'm not doing it for money. I don't have anything for sale. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this because I want to make a difference. I want to change the world. It's not about economics. It's about making a difference. So we can all do it. We really can. And I'm living proof that you don't have to be anybody special and you don't need a lot of money. You don't need anything. All you really need is to be prepared to speak and stand up and speak your truth and call things for what they are. Remove political correctness. Don't pull any punches and just name the names and call it.
Yep.
You know, do that and we'll make a difference. So, yeah, it's all on thecrowhouse.com. And thank you very much for asking me on, brother.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming on. And stay tuned for just a second there, Max, while I close this out. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this edition of The Alter View with Mr. Max Egan. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/user/Third Eye Radio Network. Have a great day, everybody.
This has been Third Eye Radio Network.